Well, we as human beings have a wonderful capacity to live at cross purposes with each other, to fall out with one another. It seems to be one of the things that we do quite well. We've made something of a habit of it, much of us in our lives. That falling out covers a whole spectrum of activity, from the slightly awkward disagreement that we have with somebody to full-blown enmity. We have remembered the very worst of that falling out this past week when the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz has been marked with a ceremony at Vad Yashem in Jerusalem, Israel's memorial to the millions who were killed in the Holocaust under Nazi Germany. The ceremony was an international affair, drawing leaders from across the globe, all expressing horror at the industrial scale of the slaughter. And of course, in addition to the 6 million Jews, there were Slavs, Roma, communists, gays, and others who were hated by the Nazis who found themselves exterminated during the Second World War and before. This was humanity at its very worst, seeing those who are different as subhuman and justifying their extermination. And of course, with this being the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz and other concentration camps, there are fewer and fewer survivors to keep the memory alive. And the question is whether there will remain the will to remember this horror so that the event is not repeated. But that's the very worst end of the spectrum of our living at cross purposes with each other. But even around this event in Jerusalem, there were signs of our living at cross purposes with each other on different dimensions, our capacity to fall out. The Polish president refused to attend the ceremony because he felt that he and his nation had been slighted. He had not been invited to speak, despite Auschwitz being on Polish soil. What was worse for the Polish contingent was that the Russian representative was invited to speak. And there's been growing tension between Russia and Poland in recent years about the rewriting of the history of the Second World War. And so we saw, even in this event, another way in which we manage to fall foul of one another. But then there was also controversy over the BBC reporting of the event. The BBC correspondent, Orla Guerin, during her report, made mention of the present nation of Israel now occupying the Palestinian territories. And some criticized this as an insensitive way of putting alongside the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories and the Holocaust, suggesting that perhaps these might be equivalent in some way. And of course they're not. And so Orla Guerin's report itself became another means of our disagreeing and debating with each other, a falling out. But we were also reminded this last week that genocide may not be a thing of the past. The International Court of Justice in The Hague ordered measures to prevent the genocide of the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. This way of human beings failing to get on with each other at the worst extreme that means still goes on in today's world, and we have not learned the lessons. But then this last week was also the week of prayer for Christian unity. The week of prayer for Christian unity began as a week of prayer with the Roman Catholic Church in 1908, as the ecumenical movement was beginning to get underway. The week of prayer became fully ecumenically owned during the 1960s. And it's now become a regular feature of our church calendars, although I suspect less well marked and supported now than it would have been 20, 30 or 40 years ago. But this week of prayer is a reminder that for much of its 2,000-year history, the church itself has been gradually fracturing and splintering into different groups through disagreements and failing to get on with one another. We keep on breaking into more and more units. And only through the past 100 years have there been concerted efforts to try to bring the different denominations and traditions together in a sense of being one in Christ. So even in the church, we seem to have this way of falling out with one another and breaking down. After I'd been here for a year, the elders had an away day to reflect on where we were going as a church. We went to St. Catherine's Centre in the East End of London. And I came home from that centre and I said to Sally, I said, it's remarkable. This is the first church that I've been in where the leaders aren't involved in all sorts of different political agendas with each other. And I mean political with a small p, kind of church politics, different people pushing and pulling in different ways. Now that was a great reflection on the life of this church and the leaders and elders that we have. But it's also a sad reflection on my previous 35 years of ministry where that hadn't been the case. And most ministers will tell stories of struggling with tensions and conflicts within their congregations. When I was in my first church in Halifax, a colleague of mine who was minister in a neighbouring church, she used to speak of going to her deacons' meetings as going to her demons' meetings. Now, she said it with a glint in her eye, and she had a great deal of love and respect for those who were leading her church with her. And yet there was also a reflection under that of the kind of tensions that were going around within the church, that this was a difficult context to work in. Now, from Holocaust to the goings on in local Baptist or United Reformed churches, of course, there's a huge difference there. The one is not equivalent to the other. But both are examples of the difficulty that we find in doing that very simple human thing of getting on with each other. And it has always been the case within the church, as we read from Paul's letter to Corinthians. This very early church, formed around 50 AD, just 20 years after the death of Jesus. Already by the time Paul had left them for a few years, they had begun to fall out with each other. They had begun to break down into factions. This was the way church life was right at the beginning, a congregation breaking down into factions around personalities, it seems. One was following Paul, another was following Cephas or Peter, another was following Apollos. And each of them believed that around these particular leaders, they probably found the truth of Christianity. And if you didn't follow your way, you weren't part of the real in-crowd. And the church at Corinth probably kept on breaking down and splintering into these different groups and factions. They were very young in the Christian faith, and they needed to learn what it was to live together in the harmony to which Christ called them. And Paul calls them out on it. He calls them to a different way of life. Because as followers of Christ, they were called to live differently. They were called to live under a different set of values. And this may not have been the extreme of Holocaust, but it was the beginning of a journey of a fracturing community where their founding was for something else. And Paul calls them back to reflect on the way of Christ and on the cross, to call them to a new way of being together. And this wasn't just a kind of a tactical need of the church. If the church was going to be successful, it had to be together and pull together. Like you might, a coach of a football team might want to get their squad so that they work together well in order that they can play together well. So that kind of the unity and the cohesion of the squad becomes part of the tactics in order to get the greater goal of winning the game and winning the tournaments. But for Paul, it was much more fundamental than that, and for us, it is much more fundamental than that. Because the very basis on which we are called is on the work of God in Christ, who at the cross is bringing broken humanity back together again. The whole purpose of the cross is for God to heal the injured wounds of broken humanity, to bring people who have turned away from him and have turned their backs on each other back into communion with him and into communion with each other. And so the very project and purpose of the church in Christ is to seek to bring together a healed humanity and to learn what it is to live together one with another. So being united in mind and thought, as Paul calls upon this church, is not so much about having a single creed or a single set of beliefs that we all agree on. It is about having a single heart that is focused on the Christ who gave himself for us on the cross in order to make us one with him and one with each other. And we need to learn to work at this at the basic level, at every level of our lives. Because it's when we stop giving attention to our togetherness in Christ and our togetherness as human beings that we will begin to lose our focus on what Christ is all about. And then things can spin out of control and boil over into other kinds of division as well. We are God's first port of call, if you like, in building this new humanity, of showing what it is to live together with our differences, but to live together in Christ. How to live together when we disagree with each other and still find a way of getting on with each other. Living together, even though we might sometimes have different values, and yet we hold together. Living together, even though we come from different backgrounds and with different cultures, and yet learning to live together in Christ. And so Paul asks this very basic question: is Christ divided? Well, of course not. Our focus should be on Christ. There are different types of community and different ways in which you can express whether people belong in or out of that community, and I think I've spoken a little bit about this before. Some communities are what I would term as bounded communities, that are determined by the edges of that community. So this might be like the image of a field. The animals that belong in that field are the ones that are inside the hedge. As long as they're within the perimeter of the hedge, they belong in that field. You don't belong if you start stepping outside of the hedge. This is kind of putting an edge around things. You define the togetherness by those who are inside that edge. And you can have some communities like that. You determine how far you can disagree. If you go any further than that, then you no longer belong. But there are other ways of belonging that are much more like a planetary system. Objects that belong to a planetary system are not defined by what's at the edge. They're defined by what's at the center. Anything that belongs to a planetary system belongs because it is focused on the center. So within our planetary system, all of the objects, the planets, the comets that revolve around the sun belong to that system, because they are focused on the center. It doesn't matter how far out, how different their orbits, they all belong, not because of the edge of it, but because of the center. A church, it seems to me, is a centered community. We find our togetherness because we center ourselves on God in Christ. And all of us may circle around Christ in different ways, in different kinds of orbits, different shaped orbits, different distances, if you like, from Christ, different ways of expressing that. But we are together because we are centered on Christ. We define ourselves not by the edge, not by how far you're allowed to go and no further, but because of our center, the one on whom we focus. And it's when we together look to our center, who is Christ, and trust each other as focusing on Christ at the center, that we will learn to build the kind of community that challenges the broken communities of our world into a different way of living. So that we live not at cross purposes, but we live within the purpose of the cross. And the purpose of the cross is to bring us together and to make us one in Christ.